There was a time when humans and sharks swam together as close friends, brothers. They chased the sun through the water, played hide and seek in the reef, dove deep and explored together, and laughed at the silliness of it all. One day, the human brother had an idea. "Let's play a game," he said. "A race to see who can reach the North Star first." Certain of his victory, the shark brother agreed, and the two jolted in opposite directions. The shark brother followed a whale shark, thinking its pattern was the North Star. For hours he swam, chasing the animal in the scattered moonlight until it rose from the deep to feed. Meanwhile, the human brother believed the star was beyond the surface, so he climbed onto land, scaled the tallest mountain, and pointed at the night sky. "Look, I found it," he yelled, turning to face the ocean he had left behind. Far off in the water, the shark exclaimed, "Look, brother, I have found it." But the whale shark drifted off, dark ocean empty around him. So distant had they traveled, so separated had they become, that they could no longer find one another in the vast expanse of land and sea. And from that day forward, the brothers could no longer hear one another. Today, stories about the ancient beings under the sea, how they live, and what we can do to protect them.
Welcome to Expedition Earth, a podcast where we reconnect to the wonders of our world and find a way to protect them. I'm your host, National Geographic Explorer Lily Sedigat. Together, we'll rediscover what makes us human.
They're sensing the world through ways that we could never understand.
This is Naomi Clark Shen.
They have these super senses, you know, these ampullae of Lorenzini, and they detect the world through magnetic fields. It's just we can't even comprehend that.
From a young age, Naomi was fascinated by sharks, how they can sense the Earth's magnetic field, but how we're not entirely sure why. How ampullae of Lorenzini, pores filled with gel that cover their snouts, allow them to sense electrical impulses, like the heartbeats of their prey.
Yeah, they're weird.
Naomi is a Singaporean, and her work focuses on conservation, understanding sharks, as well as stingrays, to support populations in the wild. And she does that through dissection.
So firstly, all the sharks and stingrays I dissect are already caught by fisheries. So I make it a point that I don't kill animals just to do research. So the work I do, it looks to understand their biology and basically how they live in order to understand how we can protect them better.
There are more than 1,200 shark and ray species that we know of, and many are incidentally caught, accidentally swept up with other fish. When a species Naomi is studying gets pulled out of the water, she uses the opportunity to learn more about their habitats, behaviors, and even their personalities.
They're not like copy-paste replica of each other. So, you know, one shark had a massive squid in his stomach that was the same size as him. And you're just like, wow, like, you know, this shark has learned how to live, like, and he's bold and he's taking down those big animals. Like, I love that kind of thing. And then there was another one which just had a belly full of small prawns and some sand. So he had been feeding along the bottom. You know, I don't know, maybe he wasn't as daring as to take a squid the same size as him. So yeah, little things like that. And you start to understand that they're all thinking differently and going about their lives differently.
Naomi wasn't always drawn to sharks and marine life. As a child, she was afraid of the ocean. When her parents took her on snorkeling trips to Malaysia, she'd be too scared to explore very far.
And I would always snorkel in the sand, but not actually go out on the reef. It's like a family joke because I was so scared of what was out there.
But as a teenager, Naomi saw a show about hammerhead sharks that changed her perspective.
So when I watched these programs that showed what sharks are actually like and how amazing it was like the fear just turned into curiosity. And I think we are interested in things we're scared of, so that probably spurred it a bit more. And I mean, I'm not going to lie, I still think the ocean is actually quite scary, but I love it as well.
Fossil records for sharks go back 400 million years. They've outlasted dinosaurs and survived 5 mass extinctions, including one that wiped out over 90% of marine life. As ocean predators, they've often been portrayed as bloodthirsty and violent. And while they can be dangerous, in reality, their behavior is much more nuanced.
I think it's wrong to say that we shouldn't be cautious of certain species, because we should, because attacks do happen, but that's because we're in their world. And there are certain things we can do to keep ourselves safer, like don't swim at dawn and dusk, because that's when they're out looking for food. So I think we should be cautious in a healthy way, but definitely the fear that a lot of people have is very unfounded. A lot of times we go in the ocean and there are a lot of sharks there, including some species which could hurt you if they wanted, and they just don't. And I think that says it all.
When Naomi started her current research, finding rays and sharks proved to be a challenge. Since she only studies animals that were incidentally caught, to get a hold of them, she had to go directly to the source.
I have like this strange relationship with a fish market because, you know, obviously I don't like to see dead animals, but I just think they're fascinating places.
Singapore's fish market is bustling, only open from midnight to 5 a.m. And it's a side of the city that people don't normally see.
It's just pure concrete floors, and the fish, stingray sharks, are all on the floors covered in ice. So there's a real sound of the shoveling of ice going on. They're pushing boxes full of seafood down these small alleyways, shouting at people to get out the way. So I get shouted at a lot. The smell is this overwhelming stench of just seafood. And it's so pungent that it actually sticks to you even when you've left. It's a completely other side to the otherwise very civilized, glossy Singapore that is presented, which is why I think I love it so much.
At first, Naomi and her team were outsiders. They weren't there to buy seafood, but they also weren't merchants. And building relationships with the fishers meant having to prove themselves.
One of the funniest things when we first started going down there is we wore these fluorescent kitchen gloves to protect our hands from, you know, touching all of the dead sharks and stingrays. And then we realized just like how ridiculous we looked. And if we wanted to be taken seriously, we needed to get rid of those and really fit in with the guys down there that use their bare hands. Some of them don't even have shirts on. They're just like in their wellies, like getting real stuck in to the seafood. So we were like, you know, we need to be a bit more like them. So we got rid of the fluorescent gloves. And then we turned up with our money pouches one time, and the merchants were like, yeah, these girls are here to stay.
Sharks and rays are very closely related. Stingrays evolved from sharks about 150 million years ago, and Naomi's current research focuses on two specific species.
The stingray species is called the blue-spotted mask ray, and the shark species is called the black spot shark. So they're species that most people probably have never heard of.
Both animals are small. The black spot shark grows to just under a meter. They're slender, gray, with this little black spot on top of one of their fins. And while the blue-spotted mask ray doesn't even reach half a meter wide, it has these neon bright blue spots all over its back.
So even at their full adult size, they're actually considered very small. A lot of people, when they see them, they actually ask if they're babies, because everyone thinks sharks and stingrays are really big, right? They're caught incidentally in fishing traps, but that doesn't mean there's not a market for them.
Naomi was drawn to both of these species because while they were being caught, eaten, and sometimes overfished, in conservation efforts, they were largely ignored.
So down at the fishery port, it's interesting because they stack stingrays upside down in piles. And I find that interesting because what it does is it almost takes away the identity of the stingray, because you tell a stingray species from the pattern and color on their back, but they stack them upside down. So you can't see their identity, which I find quite sad. And one of the stingray species, you know, when I flipped it over, it had these beautiful blue spots, and it was the blue-spotted maskray. And the spots reminded me of forget-me-not flowers. And it was just like this, I don't know, I just really felt like I wanted to help this particular species, because surely enough, it has been forgotten about. There's not a lot of conservation effort for this little stingray that doesn't get very big, but it has these beautiful bright blue spots on it. So I thought, you know, I would like to help this. It was almost like it was calling out to me, like, don't forget me, don't forget me. So I thought, yeah, I'd like to do something for this particular species.
Conservation sometimes gets presented as a direct linear relationship. To save an animal, just stop eating it. But in reality, our decisions are part of a complex web of relationships.
When you're first learning about this field, you get a very simplistic overview of things. So a lot of communication, particularly around sharks, is, well, just don't eat them. But the more you learn about it, the more you realize that it's far more complicated than that, and that you need to start looking at conservation in a really holistic way. So, for example, if you say, well, you can't eat this species and people stop eating it, fishermen will just catch something else. So you're pushing the pressure onto another animal.
And sometimes that pressure gets pushed onto an animal that could be an important source of food, something that supports an entirely different population in the wild. And if we overfish that, it can have unintended and devastating consequences.
People have this misconception that it's only important to conserve top predators, because that's what the media focuses on a lot. But the truth is, we need to conserve animals at every single stage of the food web, because they all play their part in making sure the ecosystem is healthy.
Dissection itself can be messy work, emotionally numbing. But it's also necessary. And Naomi has found that learning about animals after they pass can connect her with how they lived.
So when I was going to the fishery ports for 3 years, I almost went numb to the amount of death that I was seeing, because you have to cope. But by doing the dissections, it's reconnected me with the animals, because you're learning about their lives. So I'm understanding what their last meal was. I'm seeing the females that are either pregnant and they were just about to give birth, like they were so close and they didn't quite make it. And I'm also seeing the females where you can tell they did just give birth, and you think about their little babies that are out there swimming around. And the dissection experience has made me want to connect people with these animals a lot more.
That connection is something that even Naomi herself found losing at points during the pandemic. Unable to go out into nature, she felt like she lost a sense of what the world is meant to look like, and it's made her realize the importance of maintaining that connection.
You get disconnected from it, and you start seeing what's around you as the norm, you know. And so in these 2 years as well, I've burnt out. I felt like, what is the point, and is there any hope in doing this? And so I think for a lot of people, I can understand why they aren't connected to the natural world. So I think it's very important to start communicating, connecting people with what the planet should look like and with these animals, so that they want to make a difference and do their part. I just had to put my emotions aside to cope. And I'm actually a very emotional person when it comes to animals. It's like my body and my emotions almost shut down just to allow me to do this work. But sometimes it really does come back and hit me hard, especially when I started pulling the babies out of the stingrays and sharks. When stingrays are inside their mother, they actually wrap their wings around themselves. And so you had these two twin babies that had their wings wrapped around themselves, and they were belly to belly inside the mother. And so I took the babies out and just kind of opened them up. Like they were this like precious little package. And the babies were basically almost fully formed. So they had the blue spots. They had the little black mask across their face, which their mother has. And they had their little stinger. And it was just so sad because it was like they were ready to take on the big bad world. You know, their mother had put all this effort in and they looked the part. They had their little stinger as a defense and they were ready. And they just didn't make it out. And they never got to open their wings and use them to swim through the ocean.
It changed you. Like if you are in the water with this animal in a natural environment, it changed you.
This is Ale Panzo.
Touch your soul in many different ways and touch your brain in many different ways. And it's not comparable with anything in captivities or where the animal are fed, the interaction are very, very different, like in uncomparable for what is really meeting them in their own environment, doing, you know, their own life.
Ale is a marine biologist and co-founder of the Large Marine Vertebrate Research Institute, or LAMAVE, a not-for-profit in the Philippines that protects marine megafauna, everything from sharks and rays to dolphins and turtles.
We try to do conservation through research and education and working with the local community and the local politics to work together to create a future for these animals.
Ale got his start back in 2002, researching orcas in Alaska. Part of the work involved actually getting on a boat and finding them in the wild. On one of the trips, he was with a team a day and a half away from the nearest port. In the distance, they could see land, a glacier slowly spilling into the ocean. And as they were looking for orcas, it started to rain.
Alaska, the weather changed really, really fast. So it's really hot and really cold in the summer. So you can imagine all the green mountains all around you and then this white tongue of ice basically coming down from the mountains and coming into the sea. And then the color of the sea at the base of the glacier is always this like turquoise, so like very like pale blue. And there was this double rainbow. And at some point we start hearing the vibration of this killer whale echolocating and whistling through the boat. So the hull of the boat work basically like as speakers and echoes the sounds of the killer whales. And when we just look on the side of the boat and there was this family of six or seven killer whales that were just playing around the boat. You can hear them and you can feel the vibration of this killer whale playing and socializing, and it was just perfect, the perfect scenario. So there I was hooked. I said, that's definitely what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Ale and LAMAVE do conservation work throughout the Philippines, but one of their primary focuses is in the Bohol Sea, a body of water south of Bohol and Leyte, surrounded by islands, home to incredible coral reefs and some of the most productive waters in Southeast Asia.
And there is a very small entrance where this water funnels through and it basically pumps into the Bohol Sea. So these waters are really, really rich. And the Bohol Sea is very deep, just around 5 kilometers from shore, you're already 2 kilometers deep. So it has this very deep canyon where this water mix and create the perfect habitat for plankton that the whales come to feed, and the whale shark and the mantas come to feed, and the plankton attracts squid, and most of the dolphin species that are in Bohol are actually squid eaters.
The area is also home to the largest species of shark in the world, whale sharks. Capable of growing over 12 meters long, they're gentle, charismatic creatures with teeth incapable of biting humans and covered in a pattern of beautiful white spots that look like the night sky. They spend most of their time deep underwater, but when they come up to the surface to feed, seeing them can be a magical experience.
Whale sharks are really majestic animal and they're magical creatures for many different reasons. And one of them is their sheer size, right? They are size of one or two school buses. I think their magic is in their calmness and their how slow they move. You see them gliding and you don't see them moving their tail at all. They're just there and they look like they are not moving. Despite being is the largest fish in the sea, it feed on the smallest creature in the sea, that is the zooplankton. you see them in their natural environment. They're so beautiful, they're so big, and you feel so small. You can actually be there without disturbing them, and you feel like you're a witness in this magical moment in their life where they come all the way up for like 1,000 meters deep just to feed on the surface next to you and share this moment with you.
Swimming with whale sharks has grown into a popular tourism experience in recent years, but it's also brought up questions about what's good for the animals. In some models, whale sharks are baited with shrimp, which changes their diets, and they're brought closer to shore, running the risk of them getting injured by boats. On the other hand, sustainable models allow whale sharks to be in their natural rhythms, in their natural environments. It takes longer to find them, and tourists have to wait, but Ale says the experience is unbeatable.
So you jump in the water and you see nothing. You're in the silence and everything is blue around you. And then you can hear these balls of tuna just flying next to you and shooting next to you. And there can be like 1,000 small tuna just moving all around you. And you're in this vortex of whirlpool of tunas. And then the tuna's gone and the silence come back again. And like 15 seconds later, you see these giant shadows with this giant mouth open, just coming and try to follow the tuna.
Being in the ocean with these creatures engages an entire sensory experience we don't feel on land. Our normal soundscape is blocked out. We find ourselves weightless, in a blue void. And suddenly, in the presence of a whale shark's great size and calm, we begin to sense the world around us in a way we didn't realize we could.
And usually the encounters are not very long, maybe a minute and a half. But if when you're in the water, it feels like you're there for hours just because it's so magical. You're so out of your environment and you feel so immersed in the ocean.
Part of Ale's conservation work means encouraging communities to adopt sustainable tourism models.
Tourism itself is not a threat. It's a threat when it's not managed or not properly regulated.
Issues with tourism tend to arise when things are damaging to the environment or the local culture and community.
It needs to be sustainable for the local community. So it needs to be something that the local community also want to be doing and is sustainable for them as well, meaning that doesn't bring radical changes to the culture or doesn't bring shift in the culture that can create conflict. Being neutral is not good enough. Maybe it was good 20 years ago, something that doesn't make neither bad or good. Now to be sustainable, you need to be actively good.
Part of being actively good is not only creating magical experiences, but using those experiences as learning opportunities.
Use the education of the tourism. Be sure that the tourists leave with more than just a selfie, right? You want them to leave changed. And it's all about the story that the locals tell and shared and the experience that they have in the water.
Education isn't just facts and numbers and statistics. It's also personal narratives. Community leaders and their stories can be a key to sustainable change.
When I first arrived there in 2012, we went for an exploration and we actually found out that there were so many whale sharks in the area. And we were so excited because we thought we discovered it, right? But as usually happens, the local knew very well. And they knew for like at least 20, 30 years that the whale sharks were around.
One of the first people Ale met in the area was a pastor, someone who welcomed Lamave's conservation efforts with open arms, who organized his own group to paddle up and down the coast looking for whale sharks. Aside from his passion for protecting these beautiful creatures, Ale also noticed this very distinct scar he had on his leg.
So the first time he came into this village, because he was not from there, when he moved in, he heard that the people in Bohol were hunting the whale shark, and he thought that he could have maybe make some profit out of there because the village was very poor, but he didn't know how to do it. So he got this hook made from one of the guys in Bohol, and the guys in Bohol hunt the whale shark by jumping on their back. So he just jumped on their back, and then the hook and the line attached to the hook, this very big handmade rope, got entangled on his feet and dragged him down. And he was basically drowning. And he managed to release the rope, but it gave him this like burn and scars on his leg. And when he came up, He thought that he spoke to God and God gave him a second chance. And from that day, he actually became the protector in the village for the whale sharks. So they never hunted again and they started developing this tourism industry.
Conservation is still a challenge. Creating sustainable tourism takes time and a shift of mindset. And many have no option. They're forced to fish all day in unproductive waters or work in hotels and restaurants just to make ends meet.
So the Philippines has been marketed as a mass tourist destination instead of a high quality, low number destination. And that, I think, why we had many of the problems at the social, at the economic, and at the environmental level.
Ade and the team at Limave continue their work, researching, building community relationships, encouraging sustainable tourism. And Ade finds ways to connect not just to whale sharks, but to people and the world around us.
Just last October, after a year and a half of being in one of the strictest lockdowns in the world, we managed to get a permit to go out for survey, and we were looking for whale shark, and we couldn't find whale shark. And after a week, we were ready to give up. And we navigate just around 10 kilometers offshore this bay. And we saw a little, we thought was a plastic bag just floating on the surface. And we slowly get closer just to pick it up, because when we're out of survey, we try to clean up all the plastic that we find. And when the boat actually approached, this plastic bag was slowly swimming away. And instead was an oceanic mantas. And we jumped down, and actually there was around 8 of them feeding just underneath the boat. And having 10 of these animals feeding around, you can really feel their presence in the water. Some of them were like over 5.5 meters large. You can really feel that they look at you and they move around you and they interact with you in many ways that we don't understand, right? They have an amazing sensory system all over their body. And even when they're looking at us, they can feel us, and you know that they can feel you. There is another level of connection with this animal that is, you know, as a scientist, it's hard to explain, but you can actually perceive them even if you don't see them. Like if you are in the water next to them and there's one behind you, your body knows that it's there and it stimulates a reaction into your body. The moment you get at the same eye level, your heart slows down. So maybe you don't hear the animal itself, but you hear the reaction of your body. So your body calms down, your heart calms down, and you get quieter. And you cannot get immersed on this feelings and sensation that on land we're too distracted, right? But it stimulates new senses that on land we don't use that much. With a flip of their wings, they can be gone. So they are choosing to interact with you at that time. And the fact that they chose to interact with you, they are not bothered by you, but it's also an investment. At least from our human point of view, we can perceive that there is something different. We are just a little piece of the puzzle on this planet, right? And we're just one of the many parts of nature. We grow up in a society where humans is the center of everything. We feel that we have control over everything. And these moments actually reminds you how you're just one of the many pieces of the puzzle.
This podcast is brought to you by Sky Cable. To learn more about sharks, check out National Geographic's Shark Fest, streaming on Disney+, which will feature jaws-dropping new series and specials, revealing never-before-seen footage and the latest developments in shark research. This multi-week program will explore the mysteries of shark behavior and biology, educating and entertaining audiences by getting up close and personal with the ocean's apex predator. Expedition Earth is produced by National Geographic Asia in partnership with the National Geographic Society. I'm your host, Lily Sedigat. Thank you for listening.